Max Schaefer joins me this week from Roadhouse Brewing to discuss Pilsners and controlling beer pH. This is Beersmith Podcast number 301.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit Beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 301, and it's late March 2024. Max Schaefer joins me this week from Roadhouse Brewing to discuss Pilsners and controlling beer pH. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They've recently launched a new experience called Craft Spirits and Distilling. If you make or love spirits, check out spiritsanddistilling.com for recipes, how-to videos, their Spirits and Distilling podcast, and much more. Again, that new site is spiritsanddistilling.com. And also The Barrel Mill, creators of the Infusion Spiral, used to add flavor and aroma to wine, spirits, and beer. Their unique spiral cut design creates unrivaled surface area and in a small package, allowing fast extraction of the toasted oak's aroma and flavor compounds. Looking for woods other than oak? Try their exotic woods. They offer spirals made from Amberana, American and French oak, aspen, Spanish cedar, cypress, and sugar maple. For more information, go to infusionspiral.com. Again, that's infusionspiral.com. And Beersmith Web, the online version of Beersmith Brewing Software. Beersmith Web lets you design great beer recipes from any browser, including your tablet or phone. Edit recipes on the go with access to the full suite of recipe building tools as our desktop version. Try Beersmith Web today by creating a free account at beersmithrecipes.com. And finally, a reminder to click those like and subscribe buttons on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, or whatever platform you're on. Clicking those buttons is a great way to support the show. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Max Schaefer, brewmaster at Roadhouse Brewing in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Max was previously the brewmaster at Grand Teton Brewing. Max sits on the Hops Research Council. He's an Idaho ambassador for the Hop Quality Group, a Brock Brewer for New Zealand Hops, and associate member of the American Malting Barley Association. Max is a graduate of the Seibel Institute and has 10 years of professional brewing experience. Max, it's great to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Brad.
Well, Max, it's great to have you as a first-time guest. You got a pretty long resume there.
Yeah, I do. I like to stay involved and keep things fresh and interesting. It's some of the perks of the job, I guess. Be involved and learn all sorts of things.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little about how you got into brewing and eventually became a professional brewer?
For sure. Like most brewers, I got my start as a home brewer and I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the combination of science and kind of that cooking aspect, introducing new flavors, process, technique. So I got into home brewing in college, was given a homebrew kit as a gift one year. Absolutely fell in love with it. There's a small brewery getting going in the town I was going to college in. And so I started brewing with them. They had a really amazing homebrew system and eventually scaled that up to a larger, I think 15 or 20 barrel brew house. So just poked around with them. Got to understand that a little bit better. Moved out to Jackson after I graduated from college and was going to use my degree, which is in conservation biology with an emphasis on fisheries. And I was going to do some fishery management type things. And I was actually waiting in line to talk to some biologists at one of the fish and game locations in Jackson and picked up the Jackson Hole Daily, which is our local newspaper, and found an ad for a position on the bottling line at Grand Teton Brewing. And I ran over there and handed my resume over to the bartender. The gentleman sitting at the bar was a guy named Rob Mullen, who was the brewmaster at Grand Teton at the time. He hired me on the spot, and I started working on the bottling line 2 weeks later and worked my way up over the next 6 years or so as up to brewmaster of Grand Teton.
And then you switched over recently, right?
Yeah, in 2017, I took the job as the brewmaster for Roadhouse Brewing. We were commissioning our production brewery at the time. Roadhouse started back in 2011 as a small restaurant on premise only brew pub in one of our restaurants, little 7-barrel brew house. So I came on to scale it up to the 30-barrel production facility we had and start doing our regional distribution throughout the Intermountain West.
Awesome. Well, I think when we did the resume, you talked a little bit about how you sit on the Hop Research Council and several other hop groups as well. Can you tell us a little about those? And I wasn't familiar with them and how they impact, you know, craft brewing and IPA brewing.
Yeah, for sure. So I sit as one of the voting members of the Hop Research Council, which is, you know, one of the public breeding programs. It's funded by the USDA. It comprises of brewers, growers, dealers, merchants, folks who have an interest in the hops world in some way, you know, as I just listed, all the way from growing to using those hops. You know, most recently, the Hop Research Council released the Hop Vista. We've released Triumph, Cashmere. Those hops have all come out of the public breeding program. It's a very holistic organization, so it really focuses on agronomy, making sure that, you know, the growers are going to be interested in growing these hops, making sure there's good yields, things like that. And then, of course, we want to make sure that brewers are going to be interested in brewing with those hops. We focus a lot on agronomic practices as well, you know, trying to reduce chemical spraying and irrigation practices, all those good things that we need to be looking at, you know, for the future of the earth and farming, good healthy practices, and in turn, you know, then making sure we can get some good sustainable hops out to brewers to use in fresh new, you know, IPAs. The Hop Quality Group is another group that I sit on or work with. That's a group of purely brewers. There's about, I think right now, about 55 brewers that are involved in the Hop Quality Group. And our, you know, the motto and tagline of the Hop Quality Group is oils over alpha. So we're very, you know, focused on aroma and flavor driven hops. We have our own breeding program in the Hop Quality Group, but the real emphasis of the Hop Quality Group is to, you know, spread the word and continue to educate everyone across the entire hops world that hops are a food product. So we work very closely with growers and pellet mills. Again, dealer processors, ensuring that, you know, people are not walking across a kiln full of hops with dirty boots, or people don't have buttons on their shirts and might accidentally have a button pop off and end up in a pellet mill. And then, you know, a brewer's dry hopping a beer and it's got, you know, full of buttons, or someone's reading glasses or something. So we really work to make sure that there's healthy practices in play there, and we do research in there as well. And we're really focused on high quality hops and brewing practices with the Hop Quality Group.
The first one you mentioned was a public program, right? So it, I assume those are publicly available. You can actually buy and use those hops. Whereas, of course, a lot of the private ones are licensed now, right?
Yeah, exactly. So everything coming out of the Hop Research Council is a public variety with public roots, you know, public genes and you know, everything. So we're using public root stock and germplasm to breed those hops. And we work with an amazing genetic team. I'm not the person doing that. Dr. Kayla Altendorf and Dr. John Henning are up in Oregon and Washington and are doing a lot of the breeding for us on that. And it's really, really exciting. So yeah, those are all public varieties and anyone can grow them. We're seeing, you know, Vista, that most recent release, we're seeing that being grown across the entire U.S. There's Vista in New York State right now, Vista in Michigan, throughout Idaho and Washington, Oregon. I think there's some down in Colorado actually as well. So yeah, wow. That's great. And it's, you know, hops for all type of a deal.
Yeah. I mean, I've been really happy to see hops return to New York State, which are where they were traditionally grown. And then of course, Michigan and the Midwest are growing them as well. It's kind of fun seeing these craft hops show up, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then you can start to play with the whole terroir aspect of them too. You know, it's really fun. I think Chinook is one of those great examples. We hone in on Chinook. We use it in a lot of our beers. And Idaho Chinook is very different than Washington Chinook. And then throw Michigan Chinook into the mix. It's really cool how we can start to see, you know, hops, you know, leaning into the terroir and the region they're being grown in to provide really unique and different beers with the same hop.
Well, I mean, we've known that for a while because all the Australian, New Zealand hops, of course, are U.S. heritage for by and large, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was actually this morning chatting with the team that with a group that we work in New Zealand because they're in the middle of harvest right now. So they're harvesting away. And I was asking you about Taiki, which is the, you know, New Zealand Cascade. And we really want to get our hands on some of that because of the American genetics from Cascade being grown down there in the Southern Hemisphere. It's a really cool and unique hop, and we want to keep playing with that and see what Cascade tastes like on the other side of the earth.
Awesome. Well, today you wanted to focus a little bit about Pilsners, which is a new, you know, kind of a trend in craft brewing right now. There's been a resurgence of craft Pilsners. Can you talk a little bit about what you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. We, you know, Pilsner, we've been brewing Pilsner for quite some time. At Roadhouse, our flagship Pilsner is called Highwayman. It's a 4%, you know, inspired traditional German Pilsner. And we brew it for, you know, originally we started brewing it for ourselves at the brewery. You know, it's IPA is great. And, you know, we love drinking big beers and, you know, heavily hopped things. But at the end of the day too, we wanted to have a beer that we could just drink, you know, we could just sit there and enjoy a couple of pints of after work and maybe not get palate fatigue or feel that we were becoming a little too inebriated after a long day in the brewery. So Highwayman was born. It was a little ahead of its time. We were going to actually DQ it a couple of years back, and I fought pretty hard. I said, no, we got to keep this around. This is just a great beer. It rounds out our portfolio of hazy IPA, clear IPA, you know, some Belgian beers that we brew as well. I was like, we got to keep it in the mix. And it's quickly, you know, become one of our fastest growing SKUs. You know, we find that people, as I listed earlier, want to drink it. They want to have, you know, sit down and have a couple of pints with friends. And, it's not offensive on the palate. If you're a very good beer geek and want a really well-crafted, Pilsner, Highwayman's for you. If you're just like, hey, I want to try something, yellow and beer flavored beer, it's also going to fit that niche for you. And so we're really excited that, that beer continues to grow for us. And, cause like I said, we just want to drink more of it. And so, sharing it with the masses is also really great for us.
So what style is it? Is it a European style or is it, what style of Pilsner is it?
Yeah, we just call it a Pilsner. I would say it leans a little bit more into the German style. It uses entirely German hops. It uses Saaz, a little bit of middle fruit, some Spalt, and Saphir. So it's got some really, a really nice noble character. It does use our domestic two-row. We're very fortunate to be just a stone throws away from southeast Idaho. So our malt, our barley and, is grown 2 hours away and is malted, you know, virtually in the same fields as it's grown in the malt houses around Idaho Falls. So we use that domestic two-row for our beer, but we use those noble hops. So German pils meets a little bit of kind of an American pils. It's got a nice bitterness to it. I think it comes in around low 30 IBUs, and 4%. So definitely a good session beer for everyone. But you know, we don't pigeonhole ourselves with an exact style. We know what we like, and we've kind of melded a couple of pilsners that we love, into Highwayman.
Now, one of the things that makes this beer unique, I think, is that you use a special mash profile, right?
Yeah, we do. We do. Highwayman is goes through a single decoction. We run the production brewery, the production brew house at Roadhouse is a 30 barrel Braukon. So it's a German engineered, German built brew house. So we have the wonderful fortune of being able to do these things on this brew house. I'm trying to think if it was 3 or 4 years ago. Our head brewer for Roadhouse, his name is Sean McClurg. He was poking around and he was like, hey, we can do a decoction on this thing, right? And I was like, yeah. He's like, well, can we do it on Highwayman? I was like, yeah, let's go for it. Why not? You know, and we went through the classic debate of, you know, malt is beautifully modified. We don't need to cock things anymore. We can achieve everything we want out of our malt just through, you know, basic mashes, but we decided to take it one step further. We still do the decoction. We love what it does. It adds a little bit of time to the brew day, but you know, I think that's where the labor of love comes in with brewing. And we've got the tools and the toys to do a decoction. So we feel very lucky that we can do that to this beer. We love what it does from, a head retention standpoint. That's one reason we continue to do it. We do firmly believe that we just get this nice big pillowy foam, on Highwayman. It does help with some downstream process aid, like centrifuging. We do find that, you know, a little bit of that protein breakup through various, you know, the decoction, the protein rest that it goes through, all those things. It really helps with speed up to the centrifuge, and we get a nice brilliant wort coming out of the whirlpool and then coming into the centrifuge into a bright beer tank. We attribute all that to the decoction, and we still do it. And as I said, that's why Highwayman is, you know, the perfect Pilsner for beer beer geeks. We can talk to, you know, to beer geeks and brewer nerds and all of our friends about how we decoct our Pilsner. And then again, if someone just wants a beer flavored beer and a nice yellow beer, like, they don't know how much love and we put into that beer and the decoction it goes through, and it doesn't even matter. So it really spans the whole gamut for us and how we can talk about this beer.
So how do you actually do a thing? You're only doing a single decoction, but how do you actually do a decoction on a large commercial system like that? You said it's a 3-barrel system, right?
It's a 30 barrel.
Oh, sorry. 30 barrel system, yeah, much bigger, even worse. So how do you do that? I mean, you're talking about moving hundreds to maybe even thousands of pounds of malt, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we've got our nice big mash kettle with a big agitator in it. It's got a really big fancy pump, a centrifugal pump underneath it that has large inlets, large outlets, so it can really pull the mash through and spit it out the other end. The piping of the brew house is designed that we can move it through this pump back and forth to various vessels within the brew house. So for the actual logistics of decocting a highwayman is we remove a third of the mash after its first protein rest. It's a little bit lower of a mash rest on Highwayman to start. We move a third of it over into, two thirds of it over into our louder tun, and then we're able to boil the remaining mash in that mash kettle, and then we can transfer from our louder tun back over to the boil kettle and allow us to go through that step raise and get it up into that like mid 150 degree range for its second mash rest thereafter. Going through the decoction boil.
So yeah, I was going to ask, so you're doing a protein, you're doing a single decoction, you're doing a protein rest at what? I don't know, 120 at one, or are you doing higher?
A little bit higher, low 130s or so. And then we actually will mash in at that point and we'll raise it slowly up into like the low 140s. And, you know, not really staying, you know, at certain temperatures for too long. So we mash in at that lower 130 range, slowly raise it up to 140. When we hit it, the 140, we move that two thirds over into the louder tun and then boil that remaining mash.
And what's the higher temperature step then?
Then it gets up into like the mid 150s or so, is that second, you know, that we, you know, our secondary rest, after the decoction. So we get a nice, you know, we get all of our, you know, we've hit alpha, we hit beta.
Right. So you're kind of hitting, it's almost like a traditional lager mash where you're hitting the low temperature in the 140s and then the high temperature or high end of the 150s, I guess, huh?
Exactly. Yep. Highwayman's an all barley. It's 100% two row beer. But we still do, we like to get those mashes up into a higher rest point there at the end. Most of our beers see a mash out step, you know, just get it up to 160 or so. It helps with our louder. It really, you know, helps the process all through. So Highwayman goes, you know, 130 degrees all the way up to 160, and part of it's boiled.
And you think it does really make a difference on the overall flavor and character of the beer, huh?
We do. We run a sensory panel 2 days a week. One's a kind of a true to target packaged sensory from the week before. The other is usually whether we get some new hops from the Hop Research Council or down from New Zealand or whatnot. We'll smell those. But sometimes it's like, hey, let's compare some beers. So we're able to ferment and brew 30 barrel batches to complement the 120 barrel fermenters that are our bread and butter. So we can do large batches of our decocted Pilsner. Of decocted Highwayman. And then we did do a small batch of Highway without a decoction in it, carbonated mm-hmm. them both, brewed them, they're very, very similar in age. And we did a little side by side. We did, it's hard to pick up a major difference, but we did notice like that foam. The foam was a big component for us. We just saw such a beautiful retention of foam. The lacing on the glass, it just looks really, really good. at the end of the day, we were like, we could go either way, but let's keep doing the decoction. We love it, and it's a passion for us.
That's cool. Now you also offer a West Coast Pilsner, right? Can you tell us a little about that lager?
Yeah, we do. We offer a West Coast Pilsner under the Melvin brand. So Roadhouse and Melvin Brewing Company merged about 14, maybe 15 months ago to create the Pure Madness Brewery Group. Mm-hmm. So under our Melvin brand, which we love hops at both breweries, but Melvin has such a great storied history of loving really hoppy beers. So we jumped into this West Coast Pilsner, kind of through that crazy cold IPA hoppy lager IPA. What is all this stuff? That's how I've interpreted it, you know, and now really I think we see West Coast Pilsner, West Coast Lager. It's pretty much all that I've been brewing in our pilot systems. We have a 5-barrel and a 7-barrel pilot system at both of our production breweries. And that's all I like to brew. I love hops. I love crisp, clean lager profiles, lower ABV. I love to have beers, and I would much rather have lower ABV beers than, you know, several double IPAs or something. So the West Coast Lager fits all of those, you know, they check all those boxes for us. Mm-hmm. We are treating it very similar to kind of our American IPA. You know, it's getting a nice bittering addition, a mid-boil addition as well. We're looking for it to be about 40 IBUs or so is what we're targeting. Domestic two row again. It's 100% two row, single infusion mash, and it's highlighting a bunch of you know, very tropical and American hops. There's a little bit of New Zealand hops in it as well. So it definitely differentiates itself from any of our traditional pilsners.
That's what I was right. Obviously, lagers. The key is the hop profile. What kind of hop profile are you using?
Yeah, the
hops, I should say.
Yeah, for sure. The main hops in our West Coast Pilsner, it's called Pils Boutique. And the hops in that are Nelson, Alani, and we're using a little bit of Cashmere as well. So it's got a really, really cool tropical, very fruity that, you know, the Nelson provides that amazing Sauvignon Blanc and a little bit of that diesel to it. Alani is a new hop from Yakima Quality Hops from Tim Sattler, Lee Rottweiler, those guys up in Yakima. It's the phenomenal, phenomenal hop. And that provides us some really amazing citrus and a little bit of melon component to it as well. And the Cashmere, we like using Cashmere for a little bit of body. We get a little, you know, some of those polyphenols that come out of the hops. Cashmere is one that provides amazing aroma, amazing flavor, but we like to use it as a way to enhance that body and give a little bit more oomph to the beer. So it's a crisp drinker. I'm so pumped for it to go through the packaging line here in about 3 weeks, and that'll be our summer seasonal. It's all I'm going to drink this summer for sure.
Are you what kind of yeast are you using to get that clean finish?
Yeah, we're using the Ondex lager strain. We pull that out of, I think that's coming out of BSI down in Colorado Springs. I don't remember off the top of my head what the number of it is, but it's the Ondex lager strain. So it does still like provide a little bit of maltiness. We do like a little bit of that sulfur component as well. We think that really enhances the beer. A lot of our trials of these West Coast lagers, we use almost 4 different lager strains between Roadhouse and Melvin, all the way from, you know, Weinstephan 3470. We use kind of a Czech lager strain at both breweries, so 2 different Czech lager strains, and then the Ondex lager strain as well. So we trialed them all, and we just found that the Ondex worked really well, provided a little bit of a little more legs for those hops to stand on, leaving a little bit more of that maltiness behind, rather than completely drying the beer out, which is how I like to drink beer, a really nice dry beer. But that Ondex yeast really just left a little something there for everything just to come together so harmoniously.
Well, the other major topic you wanted to cover today was pH. And you mentioned you're kind of obsessed with pH, and a lot of us work on controlling the pH in the mash. So let's start there. What do you do to try and maintain your mash pH?
Yeah, pH has been a huge push of mine for like 2 years, which is nothing, you know, new or cutting edge, right? pH is such an important component of brewing. But just really making sure that we are being consistent and staying on it has been huge for many reasons. One, in the mash, we've attributed a lot of our pH in the mash with our haze stability on our hazy IPAs. That's been a really big one for us, mashing, you know, looking for a pH of about 5.4 or so, sometimes 5.5 if we're going to go a little bit higher. We just find a really amazing haze stability range.
You do better with a higher pH for a hazy IPA, I guess, right?
We do. Yeah. And then we target a little bit lower for our clearer beers, our lagers, our golden ale, our West Coast inspired IPAs. Those are a little bit lower in that 5.3 to 5.4 range.
Yeah. I've heard that too, that a lot of people go for low pH for, you know, for lagers and things like that, that they want a clean finish.
Yeah, exactly. And we do that with 75% food grade phosphoric acid. We've played around with acidulated malt. We've done all the things. We still use acidulated malt on our small brew houses, but for the production side, we're using phosphoric acid. We've gotten really dialed with it. Both facilities utilize a reverse osmosis water filtration system. So we've got it really dialed where we know exactly what we need to add to each mash in terms of milliliters of phosphoric acid into the mash to achieve those pHs. Another big spot that we're doing a lot of pH in the brew house, pH adjustment in the brew house is in our whirlpool, is really, really honing in on lower pHs in the whirlpool. The clearer the beer, we want it close to about 5 pH leaving our whirlpool. And we'll do that in the kettle. We like to make sure that right there, as we start to transfer the wort over into the whirlpool, we're adding a little bit of phosphoric back into that. And we have found that just helps tremendously with, trude piles, that, you know, further breaking, coagulation of proteins, to form those tight trude piles. That lower pH has been huge. We've seen greater increases of wort coming out of our whirlpool. And so that helps a lot when you're, turning 30 barrel batches 7 days a week. You want to make sure that you're getting as much wort as you can out of those whirlpools.
So I assume you're measuring that pH hot, right?
We measure, yes. So we take our sample.
You said
hot,
it's in the whirlpool, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Temperature adjusted. But 5 is, 5 is fairly low, I would think, right? Going into the end of the whirlpool. So you must be adding, non-trivial amount of acid to get it down there, right?
Yeah, for sure. It is definitely a non-trivial amount. It can be anywhere from 500 milliliters up to a liter of phosphoric acid, depending on the brew. If we had a lot more hot side hops, we don't have to add as much phosphoric acid. But most of our beers, especially our hazy IPAs, they don't see hops or anything until the whirlpool. So we have to do a big adjustment with phosphoric just to get it down to the range that we're looking for. We compared, I ran a lot of analysis on it, the amount of phosphoric acid we were using and what that costs versus getting an extra barrel or two of wort into a fermenter, and getting that extra wort into a fermenter just way outweighed the cost of phosphoric acid going into our beers. So that was an easy decision for us just from a
return investment. So is it mainly a viscosity thing, or are you looking for, is there other benefits perhaps of doing lower pH in the whirlpool?
We just like it from a wort clarity standpoint. It ends up in our fermenter nice and clear, drops out all those proteins, any of, hop matter that might've made through it, just gets a really nice tight trude pile there. So we can get a nice clear wort and more of that wort into a fermenter.
And then, of course, once you start fermenting, the pH is going to drop even further, right?
Yeah.
What are you doing after that? I assume you're monitoring the pH during fermentation.
We are.
Dry hopping.
Big time. We're watching fermentation very closely. We run dailies every day on every tank, every morning, just so we can get a good handle. Nothing new there. Watching our degrees Play-Doh, monitoring those fermentation curves, and as well as checking out pH. We like to watch that pH, make sure that one, from a food safety standpoint, we want to make sure our pH is really nice and low. And also we just really like to target really low pHs in our IPAs, because we have found that that really enhances the citrus component of hops, some of those tropical fruit components of hops. If we can get that pH low, just as some of those fruits pH are low, we find that it's just a much brighter expression of those hops. So if we want, if we're using a lot of Centennial in something and we look for a nice, orange component, nice citrus zest component from our Centennial, if we can get that pH lower, it complements that Centennial and just really makes that kind of citrus aroma and zest pop.
So I guess you're almost simulating the citric acid in the fruit then? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, exactly. The way we dry hop our beers, we utilize a recirculation device called a hop gun. It's produced by Browcon. Both the Melvin and the Roadhouse facilities run these. We have several of them, the biggest of them holding 350 pounds of pellets or so. And so we're able to pour the pellets into this vessel, which is, able to be fully CIP'd. SIP'd and purged of oxygen. There's a kind of a candle in the center of it with holes in it that the pellets can't make it through. So the pellets are broken up And then recirculated back into the beer. And so it's a really good opportunity for us. And that's where we add our phosphoric, that opportunity, because we can do it in a pretty closed and controlled environments and then make sure it's getting a full mix, whether it's a 30 barrel fermenter or a 240 barrel fermenter.
So is this, I missed it. Is this a dry hopping device or is this a whirlpool device you're doing?
This is our dry hop device.
Dry hop device. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's how we can add phosphoric acid back into a fermenter. Right. If we find that the pH isn't quite where we want it, when we go to dry hop.
Interesting. Interesting. Have you done a lot of experimentation with dry hopping during active fermentation or at the tail end of active fermentation?
We have. We've done a fair bit of it. We've done things where we throw, you know, the first dry hop charge into the fermenter as we start knocking out, which has been an interesting experiment with yeast health. You know, we have found overall, if you dry hop, the earlier you dry hop in a fermentation, the less healthy of a yeast crop we will get off of it. So if we're doing any mid fermentation dry hop, we just terminate that yeast, and we don't repitch it. We don't harvest it into yeast brinks or anything. It's just done to us. We just don't get as good of a fermentation, and definitely not a good crop on the next time we go to harvest it. We do love dry hopping mid fermentation, and Roadhouse's flagship hazy IPA. It's called the Walrus. It does get a dry hop, not quite at terminal, about a degree Plato away from terminal. Mm-hmm. And we have found one that just helps immensely with diacetyl and VDK cleanup. If we make sure there's a little bit of that yeast still kicking around and we throw, you know, 3 pounds per barrel of hops at this beer, you know, we go through a hop creep and all that. It cleans it up much faster with a little bit of yeast and a little bit more fermentation.
That makes sense. Going on. Yeah. So it reduces the hop creep, right?
Yeah. Big time. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah. Interesting. Have you had any problems with the pH actually going too low? I know I've done, big fruit meads and occasionally, you know, the pH drops below maybe 3 and now, things start to really slow down with the fermentation.
You know, we have not had that problem. We're, knock on wood. We have not seen that yet. We have gotten them pretty low in the very low 4s before. And that's been a little spooky for sure. You're like, oh, is everyone going to play nicely in that fermenter and keep fermenting away? And, we have had no major issues, quite yet.
Well, that's good. Well, I thought I'd finish with a short summary of some of your other offerings at Roadhouse Brewing. So maybe you can talk about you're welcome to talk about the Melvin brand as well.
Yeah, at Roadhouse, you know, some of the offerings that we put out of Roadhouse, we make a West Coast inspired IPA called Wilson, which is just a lovely, very, very modern, traditional, clear IPA with Citra, some Chinook, some Strata, a little bit of Comet. It's a really lovely drinker. Family Vacation is our golden ale, a nice 5% beer. And we see a lot of tourists in Jackson. So Family Vacation just goes really well because everyone's coming out here on a family vacation. Sure. And so that beer does really well for us. Nice golden beer. Highwayman, we talked about. Walrus, our flagship hazy IPA with Mosaic and El Dorado. It does see a little bit of fruit puree in that one. You would never know there was fruit in it. We do it as a little spice addition. And we produce some Belgian beers as well.
What kind of fruit do you put in it?
The Walrus sees tangerine and peach. And so we wanted to complement the Mosaic, the El Dorado. That beer also sees some Idaho 7. So we wanted there to be a little bit of that stone fruit, some citrus, and a little bit of tropical to complement all that. And, you know, it's seeing less than a pound of fruit per barrel, like very, very minimal amounts of fruit.
The stone fruits don't come through all that well anyways, in general. Yeah. You don't get a lot of flavor out of them, but I guess it probably adds a little bit of spice maybe.
Exactly. Just a little bit. And we've played with no fruit. We played with more fruit. You know, we're happy with the very minimal amount of fruit we throw into the Walrus.
Do you want to talk about your other brand?
Yeah. Melvin Brewing Company, is another one of our breweries. We produce a lot of, amazing West Coast inspired IPAs out of Melvin, whether it's our flagship Melvin IPA or 2x4 double IPA. And we make a handful of lagers there. Jesus, our Mexican lager, we make a Pilsner that's called Pilsnar. And that's a really nice, very heavily hopped, German inspired Pilsner. We make one hazy out of there called Back in the Haze, which is just a fun dip our toe into a different realm of IPA brewing for Melvin. And we make a honey beer called Killer Bees, which is a honey blonde ale. And then, of course, many rotating beers, whether they're big double IPAs from our RIPA series, which is the Rotating Imperial IPA, or our Experimental series as well, which is just an opportunity for our brewing teams to get a little creative and do some pretty wild things. So we've got a beer coming out pretty soon in the Experimental series that is utilizing cannabis-derived terpenes to enhance kind of that dank, pungent aroma of cannabis and hops in a big double IPA. So we got a lot of fun things coming out of both breweries right now. We're really excited about it.
Where can people visit? And we probably ought to mention, I guess you can buy a lot of your beer commercially too. Yeah, I know it's distributed, right?
Yeah, you can buy Roadhouse and Melvin Brewing Company almost coast to coast. Our distribution footprint covers almost about 30 states these days, all the way down from Florida to up to Virginia, Chicago, Texas. The entire Intermountain West and the West Coast is a pretty good place to find us as well. If you come and see us in Wyoming, Roadhouse Brewing Company, we have a production brewery in Jackson with a tasting room that's open Monday through Friday. But we also have our brew pub with our experimental 5-barrel brew house in it. 30 draft beers made in-house. You can only get those beers there due to some weird Wyoming laws, but it's a great way to come try some of the things that our brewing teams are working on and have some really, really amazing food. About 40 minutes south of Jackson is Alpine, Wyoming, where our Melvin Brewing mothership is located. It sits right there in the head of the Palisades Reservoir, a big, beautiful lake with towering mountains around it. Wow. And we have a kitchen down there and a full tap room. So both places are awesome to saddle up, have a beer, maybe a burger, some other snacks. And of course, you can find us online, on Instagram, Facebook, all those places. And our website, if you go to puremadnessgroup.com, it'll take you to our landing page where you can go to both Melvin and Roadhouse from there.
Nice. Well, I want to get your closing thoughts on both topics. So maybe we'll talk, why don't you talk about the making the perfect Pilsner first? Any advice you have for homebrewers, for example?
I would say making the perfect Pilsner. I think nailing your IBUs, I think that's a big one. I like to put a good charge of my IBUs. I like to go about 30% of the total IBUs in my 60-minute edition, and then I like to throw the remaining target IBUs kind of in my 30 or 20 minute edition. I just love how I get some hop flavor and aroma from those mid boil charges. Making sure you're sourcing some really fantastic malt. And I don't believe that you need to use European malt to make European Pilsner or American malt to make American Pilsner. I think if it makes really, really lovely beer and it's consistent and low color, you're in great shape. And of course, really, really healthy yeast. The amount of yeast that we pitch into our Pilsners and our lagers is considerably higher, as most people, I think, do with their lager beers. But we really hone in on that yeast health. So we get a really, really solid fermentation, really good, powerful fermentation.
And then your closing thoughts on pH. As I mentioned, most of us are used to adjusting our mash pH, but we don't usually play with the whirlpool or the finish pH much.
Yeah, I would recommend, I'd recommend everyone trying it. If you're making, like I said, fruited IPAs, like we do with the Walrus, try it, lower the pH a little bit and see what it does for you. We find it really enhances the beer. Mouthfeel, the hops pop a little bit more. You get more of that citrus, you get more of the tropical fruits, kind of mimicking the pH of those fruits, as you said, Brad, it's a kind of the citric acid in the fruit coming into the beer type of vibe. And I just love it. Brew days are long, whether you're making, 30 barrels or 3 gallons, you want to squeeze as much word out of those brew days as you can. So adjusting the pH in those whirlpools, that might be able to, might get you another pint or two out of that keg that you work so hard to fill in brew. So, check those out as well and, get them down to 5 and 5.1 in your whirlpool.
What's your target level for dry hopping? Is there a particular pH level that you like for dry hopping
or finished beer, I guess, right? Right. 4.35 is where we really like to be. It's low. It's some more of the food safety and get that pH nice and low, but also that pH at that level is where we find hops really, really, popping.
Great. Well, Max, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all your great wisdom. Really appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brad. I really appreciate you having me.
Today, my guest was Max Schaefer, brewmaster at Roadhouse Brewing in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. He's also a graduate of the Seibel Institute. Max, thank you again. Appreciate you being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brad.
A big thank you to Max Schaefer for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They've recently launched an all-new experience called Craft Spirits and Distilling. If you make or love spirits, check out spiritsanddistilling.com for recipes, how-to videos, their Spirits and Distilling podcast, and much more. Again, that new site is spiritsanddistilling.com. And also The Barrel Mill, creators of the Infusion Spiral, used to add flavor and aroma to wine, spirits, and beer. Their unique spiral cut design creates unrivaled surface area in a small package, allowing fast extraction of the toasted oak's aroma and flavor compounds. Looking for woods other than oak? Try their exotic woods. They offer spirals made from Amberana, American French oak, aspen, Spanish cedar, cypress, and sugar maple. For more information, go to infusionspiral.com. Again, that's infusionspiral.com. And Beersmith Web, the online version of Beersmith Brewing Software. Beersmith for the Web lets you design great beer recipes from any browser, including your tablet or phone. Edit recipes on the go with access to the same full suite of recipe building tools as our desktop version. Try Beersmith Web today by creating a free account at beersmithrecipes.com. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.